Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears back with you here on this Tuesday, July 21st, 2026, 15 minutes past the hour. And the news was pretty stark yesterday and actually becomes official today, if you have not heard, that the city of Marion has been placed into fiscal emergency by the Ohio Auditor of State's office, Keith Faber. We are so glad this morning and thankful he has time to do this, to be joined via telephone by the Auditor of State to help us understand some of this. Keith Faber. Mr. Faber, how are you?
I'm great. How are you this morning, Scott?
Doing well. I'm just going to start with a broad question here, Mr. Faber. What does this mean for the people listening in Marion?
Well, for the average citizen, it probably doesn't mean that much of a change. For the government officials and the public officials in the city, it could mean a significant change. They go from fiscal caution up until now fiscal emergency, which means a review commission is going to be appointed by the governor, and then our office will act as financial advisor, and they'll have more oversight on how they spend money in the city of Marion.
So at this point, how money is spent in Marion will be dictated by a commission put together?
Well, it's tough to say dictated. It will be advised by the commission. The mayor and the council will still have some discretion, but they'll have limitations on what they can and how they spend their money. And, you know, the goal is to get rid of this $8.9 million deficit that they have in various funds. You know, they have a $65 million budget, so it's very workable, but they're going to have to tighten their belt. They're going to have to make some hard decisions, and we'll come in and give them advice as to what options are available and try and work them through it.
What, as near as you can tell, what happened here in Marion to get us here?
Yeah, the best summary is probably lax fiscal management. You had a former city auditor who we issued a finding recovery against, who didn't have a real good handle on the books and records and paying the bills. The city's been spending more money than they should under the circumstance. They haven't had good audits because their books and records have not been up to the task. Their books haven't been reconciled since December of 2019, and this is just an ongoing problem that it's time to fix.
You know, it's very interesting, Auditor Faber, because some of the local politicians, political officials, are calling this a best-case scenario. Would you ever refer to this as a best-case scenario?
No, the best-case scenario would manage it and never get into the situation, like the vast majority of Ohio cities, counties, townships, and other local governments. Mm.
Some people reporting this have called this a state takeover. Would you refer to it in that way?
I would not. What it does is comes in and gives the state some controls and basically tries to put some I don't want to say fence posts and around the process. Now, ultimately, you've got places like East Cleveland who have been in fiscal emergency for a super long time, and they got so bad that we had to change the state law to create a new receiver category where the receiver can come in and actually direct and manage their day-to-day spending. Marion's not at that point, and over the next process, I always say it's going to be up to the city leaders and the city council and the mayor to make decisions on how this is going to go. It can go really well like it did for the city of Niles, which got out of fiscal emergency in record time. They brought in a really good crackerjack fiscal manager who made hard decisions, worked them through it, kept everybody in line, and they got out in record time. And then others, like I said, East Cleveland's the other extreme. For more than 20 years, they ignored, they punted, they tried to do like they'd always done and just said, yeah, not our problem. Well, it is your problem. and ultimately it's on behalf of the taxpayers you manage the city and the resources. So there's really only two options when you don't have enough money and you have deficits. You can either raise revenue or reduce spending. And usually a combination of both is what it takes. But in the interim, we're going to come in and do a performance audit and take a look at some of these other things.
How are people chosen for this committee that the governor will appoint?
Well, that's up to the governor. Some of them have specific roles. There are some that are appointed because of their position in the local community. The governor usually appoints somebody from the Office of Management and Budget or one of his people to be the chair. And really, it's up to the governor to make that call.
When it comes to raising revenue or cutting spending, is there any other way to do that at this particular point besides raising the cost of bills, sanitation, things of that nature for the residents or laying people off at this particular point?
Yeah, it's tough for us to say that until we get in there and take a good look at all of the options. Almost always there are other options. I always say you got to come in and make the hard decisions. And you know, certainly you can get rid of some, I don't want to call them perks, but some of the things that aren't as necessary as other things. And, until we have an analysis, it's tough for me to guess. But we almost always can find suggestions of how to be more efficient in the operation of a local government.
You know, Auditor Faber, I've also heard some people in government, we had a city council meeting last night, say that this is the chance for the state auditor's office to come in here and help us get back on track, and it won't cost us anything, and this is a good thing because we've been off track for 5 or 6 years now. Is that something that would be prudent to say?
Yeah, I certainly think it's important for them to take the ownership and the responsibility to fixing the problem. We'll give them advice, and our role is as a financial planning and supervisor. We'll develop a plan. We'll work with them on developing plans, but it's their responsibility to implement it. It is not our job to manage the city. We do not supersede the elected representatives, and candidly, in times that elected representatives have taken that seriously and grabbed the horns and got the problem solved, the problem's going to get solved a lot faster. On the other hand, if they want to bury their head in the sand and pretend that it's somebody else's responsibility, things don't get better very fast. And so where we've seen people take the ownership of it, it just seems to work a lot better.
You know, yesterday when this became apparent to people, some people, local public officials, were saying things, this started a long time ago, this was previous administration's fault, it started under previous administrations. Is that something that would be accurate to say or should be said at a point like this?
Well, I mean, certainly there's plenty of blame to go around. We can go back to 2019 and say that you started having book and record financial problems as far back as December 2019, and probably it went before that. I'm sure there is some prior administration blame to go around. But the new administrations and the current folks have known about this problem. This isn't a secret. How can you be in have a fiscal officer or a mayor or city council that's got an $8.9 million deficit on a $65 million budget and not know about it? And if you didn't know about it, that's an altogether different problem. So, yeah, I think that certainly the solution is not blaming. It's looking forward and solving the problem.
And not to blame again, but since 2019, the election of 2019, we had a new auditor elected, Robert Landon. I believe he took office in January of 2020. We had Miranda McGinnis, an auditor here, and now we've got a new auditor, Vidya. Are any of these people, would you say, responsible, or are all of these people responsible?
I would say all of them. Without going into the specifics and looking at the details, certainly the problem went from bad to worse when we moved them from fiscal caution to fiscal emergency. And certainly identifying the book and record problems are part of it. But it's also the buck stops with city council and the mayor. I mean, they're the ones making spending decisions. And if you don't have the money, sometimes you have to make hard decisions. And that's what you're elected to do. And So the fiscal person certainly has an obligation to tell you what the financial situation is. But once you learn that financial situation, you need to act. And it isn't a defense, in my view, to say, well, we weren't clear on where the financial situation was. Well, at that point, you probably ought to start cutting back.
Auditor Faber, there was a question, some questions. There was a plan sent, I believe, the beginning of the year to the state. That was rejected rather quickly. There was another plan, I believe, sent in the beginning of April. And we had not heard anything until really yesterday about the second plan. What was going on between the beginning of April and yesterday that got us to fiscal emergency?
Well, again, the sending of a plan isn't necessarily the end-all be-all. They need to start implementing a plan, and they need to start making cuts. And they can do that without regard to a plan. And that didn't happen. The problem got worse, and we identified the control deficits. And once those nine factors that we look at, six conditions that we look at, were tripped, fiscal emergency becomes almost automatic. And that's where we got to when we started gathering more information and getting better books and records to take a look at. But ultimately, the plans that they put forward did not move them and would not have moved them into the promised land of fiscal solvency.
You know, how many of those areas were tripped? Because I think last night somebody said one area. Is that correct as to your understanding?
It only takes one. I mean, the areas are pretty straightforward. A default on a debt obligation, failure to make a payment of payroll, increase the minimum levy that results in the reduction of the minimum levy for another supervision, meaning you're taking money from somebody else, significant past due accounts payable, which is the one that really got clipped, substantial deficit balance also got clipped in city funds, and a sizable deficiency in the city's treasury balance compared to deposit cash balances of other funds. The big one was the $8.9 million in deficit funds. We identified 13 funds with combined deficit balances of $8.87 million with insufficient legal resources to eliminate those deficits. And so that's what we found. And then add to that, we had accounting and reconciliation failures. The city's books hadn't been reconciled since December 2019. Prior audits, even before that, identified significant deficiencies, material weaknesses, and noncompliance with sections of law. They got qualified opinions, and a qualified opinion means that the auditors do not believe they have been given enough information accurately that they can give an opinion, which means basically we're giving a no-opinion opinion. And the city's financial statements in 2020 and 2021 were essentially too poor of records to give an opinion. So all of those things moved us from fiscal posture to fiscal emergency.
Auditor Faber, in our final few minutes here, and I certainly appreciate the time because I know a lot of people are curious this morning. So just to make this clear, because there's been a lot said by a lot of people, and I've covered this for the last 5 or 6 years. So essentially, this problem began January of 2020. Good books were not kept. Reconciliations were not happening. That would have been the auditor at that time and oversight by council and the mayor. Is that correct?
That would be correct. And then, you know, Auditor Landon got into trouble because he wasn't making payroll taxes withholding and he improperly remitted over a number of cycles. If I remember right, I think he remitted IRS payments to the state or vice versa and got into a deficit interest and penalty provision. And the IRS wasn't willing to waive those. I think that was $150,000. But that doesn't equate to $8.9 million. So this problem has continued to cascade. And they just haven't been keeping good records. They haven't been keeping track of their spending and their balances. And it's time for that to end. And we're going to come in and help support through that.
Two quick questions here. So you would say at this particular point that this started with Auditor Landon, but never got any better. Is that right?
No, I'd actually say it probably started before Landon.
Before, okay.
And because look, if we identified problems in December of 2019, it certainly didn't get reconciled after that. If it was reconciled in December 2019, that means somebody was reconciling, at least at that point.
Right. So
we had audits that identified deficiencies and other problems. So it was probably pre-existing to some extent. Landon probably made it worse. It appears he really didn't have a handle on how to do the job.
Okay, didn't have a handle on how to do the job. But you feel that the current administration, which came in January of 2024, should have known what was going on, and the buck stops with the mayor and council.
I always believe that the current administration bears some of the responsibility. I mean, they knew that that last year we moved into fiscal caution, and the problem has gotten worse, not better. And at some point, I get it, 2024, they were inheriting a problem. But when you inherit a problem, the answer is to start solving the problem, not kick the can down the road. And ultimately, I think it's real tough for anybody to say this was all on somebody before. I would say that they would be accurate in saying that a big part of the problem they inherited.
So at this point, it is on us, the city officials, to do what they need to do. How common is this fiscal emergency?
It is very uncommon. It is a very small, I don't have the exact percentage, but a very small percentage of the local governments that we audit get into fiscal caution or fiscal emergency. You're talking in the very low percentages. However, it does happen. I mean, at any given time, we have a number of communities throughout the state that are in fiscal emergency. It's in the handfuls. It's not. It's not. Again, it's a very small percentage. And there's been one that I keep using as a reference that's been in fiscal emergency for, frankly, most of our adult lives. And that's why we created the receivership provisions to finally kind of stop kicking the can down the road on East Cleveland to try and get them out and get them into the fiscal health.
But at this point, as we started this interview by saying, the citizens of Marion will probably not see anything right away.
No, I would imagine it's going to take at least a little while to get the commission appointed. We'll get in and do an assessment. We'll do a financial assessment, a performance audit, and then we'll come in with some recommendations to give them options. We won't say raise taxes, cut this expenditure. We'll say this is what you need to look at. You're going to have to take steps to balance these funds, and here's the short, medium, and long-term options for you. And then the city will have to decide to do that or do something else. The commission will have to decide on other things. At some point, the commission does have authority to start reining in expenditures and requiring that the commission approve things like any new hires or other things as they go forward. But initially, what they'll do is do an assessment and figure out what they need to do. A budget of 12 to 15% whole, which is about where they're at, is not insurmountable over a period of time. And so as fiscal emergency situations go, I think there is a path forward that should be relatively attainable for Marion.
There's some good news. I do want to say the news yesterday and starts today. The city of Marion has been placed into fiscal emergency by the auditor of state, Ohio Auditor of State's office, Keith Faber. And joining us here this morning live, I can't thank you enough, the auditor of our state, Keith Faber. Thank you, Auditor Faber. I really, really appreciate it.
Thanks for having us. Take care, and it's good being with you.
Thank you. Bye-bye. All right. Well, there's your Auditor of State, Keith Faber, explaining what might have happened, how it happened, and what's going to happen now. Phone lines are open 34 minutes past the hour if you'd like to get in. 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. All right. Go ahead, caller.
Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Hey, he's finally come to town.
Well, there's the Auditor of State on the line. What did you make of that conversation?
Well, I didn't capture the whole thing, but, taxpayers of Marion, you can thank the not-ready-for-prime-time politicians. And there's plenty of blame to go around to the Republican Club and the Democratic Club. by giving us bumbling boobs that don't know up from down. Look at the mess they've made.
Did anything jump out? I know you didn't hear the whole conversation. Did anything jump out in that conversation at you?
Landon's screw-up has now been brought to light, I think, you know? But here we have a mayor who has no business being the mayor. He doesn't know how to control finances. He doesn't know how to get a pulse of anything that's going on. And he and that bubble-headed Bodine, they went spend, 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 like there was no tomorrow. And I hope that when they do the audits in that, they point out certain areas where they've overspent and where they neglected to be conservative in spending because not knowing how much is in the jackpot, you know?
Well, it seems as if what Auditor Faber says, and I don't want to put words in his mouth, it seems as if things started to get bad after December of 2019 and then never got any better.
Well, it sounded as though the tipping point was there. The red flags were there. But Landon did everything to make it worse. And then it just started all tumbling down. And I think it's a fair characterization that Faber said, kicked the can down the road. Well, hey, we've come to a dead end. And shame on the not ready for prime time politicians. That's why all of the citizens of Marion need to make a little bit of an effort so that we get qualified people to govern.
Well, it's very interesting. We'll see where we go from here. Hey, thanks for calling.
Thank you. To a better tomorrow.
All right, phone lines are open, 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. Now, we've heard from 40th Treasurer of the United States, Mary Ellen Withrow, former 3rd Ward City Councilman and former Chairman of the Finance Committee, Jason Schauber, this morning, and State Auditor Keith Faber. What a show this morning. Go ahead, Colin.
Great interview with us. I mean, good morning, Scott. How are you today?
Well, just another day in Marion, you know.
My goodness, what an interview with the state auditor, huh?
I think he said, you know, I give Auditor Faber a lot of credit. He's not in Marion. He's a very busy man. But he certainly seemed to know his facts, and he knew the names, and he was aware of what was going on.
Yeah, he seemed pretty well-versed in our particular situation, didn't he?
He certainly did. What did you make of that interview?
Well, I heard him say the problem started with Robert Landon, is what I heard him say.
You know, it seems like everybody said that this morning.
I think we can finally put it to rest now when it came out of the elected state auditor, Republican state auditor's mouth, who just moved us into emergency, where the root cause of this problem lies. Now, has it escalated since then? Absolutely. But where did this shitstorm start? Robert Landon.
Well,
and boy, oh boy, I can't wait for those findings for recovery to roll down on his ass. Buddy, you better get yourself a part-time job right now. City of Marion is coming for you.
Well, and again, I truly don't want to beat up too much on Robert Landon this morning because I didn't know what these people were going to say.
Well, you know what? No, the auditor made a great point. And you know what? Jason, thank you for taking responsibility. And Jason, you're right. You guys should have fought harder back then. You should have demanded more accountability. You should have done something about him before it got to this place. And every elected politician leading up to where we are right now bears some responsibility in this, because as Faber said, when Collins came in, he knew the books were screwed. He knew he was stepping into a situation that hadn't been audited in 4 years. And what's he do? He slapped $250,000 worth of stickers all over the goddamn place.
Well, I think the auditor did mention that, if I
remember.
Yes,
he did.
Yeah.
Yes, he did.
Spending.
So, Bill Collins, don't be sitting in. I hope your day's getting worse, buddy. The auditor of state just laid some blame at your feet, too. At 9 a.m. meeting, he's having a meeting at 9 a.m., so he didn't get to hear the auditor of state put the blame at his feet. He'll get to come out of his meeting and after probably royally getting his behind chewed by the union, And here this auditor state's pointing the finger at him, too.
Well, I would like to say this. As I was saying, I don't want to lay this all on Robert Landon or beat him up. Because
there's plenty of blame to go around.
There's a lot of blame to go around here. And as the auditor said, things did not get better. So we have to say Miranda McGinnis. I don't know what we can say about Vitti at this point because I don't know if we know much of what's going on there.
Her office has already came in paying bills late. And if the buck stops with them, remember, she was the solution to all of our problems. Twyla was the solution to all of our problems. Okay.
Well, that's where we are. And he also did say, Auditor Faber, that the previous administration does bear some responsibility as well. So I think we can't lay this all at Bill Collins, although he did say that they should have known what was going on and the spending was, I think he said, I'm trying to think of the exact word he used, but excessive spending maybe have been what he said.
Something along those lines. I don't remember the exact word either because I was just like, oh, go ahead, get it, Auditor Faber. Tell the tale. Tell the story. Tell the truth.
Well, I want to talk just for a second for people who might be listening. Last night was the first time I have seen a standing room only crowd at City Council.
Woo! It was hot in there too, wasn't it?
On a night when we had the smoking allergies outside.
Yes. And so, we're all packed behind Zalbo's.
You know,
I loved it, though.
I saw something that I had never seen last night. I went out in the hallway for a second, and somebody was actually probably watching it on Facebook and actually got up from where they were to run down there and run through the screener so he could get up in the room to speak. And that was after the room was already standing room only.
Yep.
So, you know, that was very interesting.
He's the one that got up and said the only place we need SWAT cameras are in the auditor's office.
Yeah, he did say that. He did. And I was out in the hall when he came in. He was ready to go. But I think it points to something very important. You can watch these things at home, but unless you come down there, it doesn't mean anything.
Exactly. And last night, the presence in the room, I don't want to say it was electric, but it was palpable. How's that? You could feel it. You could feel the mood of the room. You could feel the energy. I believe it or not, I was back there trying to keep my corner at bay, trying to keep people under control. So when we all got accused of talking, that's why I took umbrage with that. No, I'm back here trying to maintain. Now, not everybody was getting rowdy, but the ones that were getting rowdy, I was trying to get them to simmer down so we didn't play into the narrative that these things are so unruly that we need rules.
Well, I do want to say this. I think for the flock camera people, unfortunately, this is my assertion of what happened last night. I think that even though they had a packed room there last night, I think it fell on a bad day. It fell on a news day where the news was dominated by something else.
But we talked about SWAT cameras for 2 hours last night.
Oh,
we talked about the city's finances for, 20 minutes?
Right. No, absolutely. But the news that will come out of that
will be the
financial situation.
Columbus used SWAT footage as their financial situation.
You know, I didn't see that. I fell asleep after that meeting. It was a busy day yesterday.
Oh my goodness, that was exhausting, wasn't it?
So what did the Columbus News show? I didn't even see it.
They showed so the guy that said the only place we need SWAT cameras are in the auditor's office said that, and then the young woman that got up and spoke that was from LaRue or Richwood, which was weird. They let her speak, but they wouldn't let the other out of city residents speak. I don't get that. That's a neither here nor there. We're not talking about decorum. They used her. She said something about being $12 million in the hole or something like that, and they used that clip. They used just very limited clips, and then they did use some of it. They obviously interviewed Panett, and they used, I'm going to say, maybe 40 seconds or maybe a minute of what he said. It was.
You know, former city treasurer Tom Panett, I was out in the hallway when he was giving that interview. I thought, you know, he said some pretty strong things, to say the least.
He sure did, and I think that must have been what they clipped.
Yeah.
He's not pleased with, basically, you know, I mean, and I can imagine, you think about, like, Kelly Carr, you think about him, who, as you said, Kelly Carr was winning awards at the end of her, well, Shaver said it. She was winning awards at the end of her last term. And then you had Panett and, you know, $17 million. And I'm sure he was proud of how he was able to build up our stockpile and our reserves. And they just a few years after leaving office, it's all destroyed. How sad is that?
Well, did they use any of the Rollins footage?
They did, and they had Rollins on there saying best case scenario. And, you know, I'm going to give Rollins, he's presenting it wrong because it's looking like he's trying to sugarcoat things. And he just, if I can put words into his mouth for him, what I think he needs is, we are finally getting an adult in the room that knows what they're doing, and we will not have a choice to do this stupid stuff that we have been doing. And that's the best case scenario, is that we are getting competent people to come in and run our finances. So I believe that's what he means by best case scenario, because this is not good. And to Auditor Faber's point, there are three cities in fiscal emergency.
Yeah, in Ohio right now.
Ohio, and Marion will be the fourth.
Well, I would also like to say this, is what I want to say about flock cameras really quick, even though that was what dominated the room last night, and even though there was a little footage apparently on the news last night, it's very clear.
It's finance capacity, not flock.
Right, but it's also very clear to me that there isn't a single person on that committee, including Scott Kreider, who wants to eliminate these flock cameras altogether. So I believe that... even though the
people need to realize right now, they're sitting, and I know Shaber said people might not jump into council, but I'm seeing some Democrats that are kind of energized right now, and they're energized by this, and they see their way in. So those people all need to remember, old Danny Boy, Sally Jesse, who changed his glasses, so we're going to call him Danny Boy now. Old Danny Boy and Kreider need to realize the whole town votes for them, not just third ward. All Ralph Smith needs to do is turn out 100 people. Kreider and Danny Boy need to turn out 1,000. So that room last night was full of more people who won't vote for them than will.
Well, and also, I do want to give credit to Ralph Smith. Ralph Smith opened up the meeting last night by saying he was sending the decorum to council with the...
He didn't open with that. He opened with a big long
yes.
For how we were going to behave in Grandpa Smith's committee meeting.
Well, that's... that he's entitled to do that.
And then he didn't even follow his own rules all the way through.
But, well, that's what I said. If there's no, I've said this all along. If there's nobody there to enforce these things, it's not going to mean anything anyway. But
I was shocked.
He sent it on to council with the recommendation to vote no. Rob Smith said that.
And you should, well, you probably did. Danny Clark's face, though, for the people that were listening, because my face just broke out into the biggest smile. And I just... And when they put the roll call in and they voted, you know, to send it on to vote no, I mean, he just looked like a little, like someone had just punched his puppy. And I couldn't help but smile and blow him a kiss. Oh, God, it was great. And
well,
we made eye contact when I did it, so...
Well, like I've said, I said it weeks ago, I never felt this was going anywhere. I didn't think Rob Smith liked it from the first reading.
We're not allowed to have signs in city council. Since when has that ever been an issue?
Well, I don't know. I don't know. Do people
have
signs?
I've got a t-shirt that's got a middle finger on it, and I'm going to wear it and see what they do.
Well, that was pretty much...
If it's to that point, nobody holds up signs, so you're just coming up with rules now. But if we wanted to hold up a sign, why couldn't we?
Well, I also want to say this. Make sure I get this in this morning. You know, Mayor Collins is in a very tough position right now.
Good! He deserves it.
Well...
Not this asshole. This is what you get, buddy.
Well, here's what I will say. I think he's in a very tough position, and I do think he handled himself very well last night. Yesterday could not...
considered, he looked exhausted, though, didn't he? And he was hoarse, so I wonder if that's from screaming.
Well, a lot of people were hoarse yesterday from the... I mean, Matt was hoarse because of the weather outside. But I want to say this. That's a rough day when you've got Channel 4 coming in. That's a rough day when the media's coming in. That's a rough day...
When your secret gets told a day early...
When he was assured, he said that that was not what was going to happen.
The state auditor had it on their website yesterday, Scott.
Right. No, I'm not saying it's wrong to
so
do
how
that.
How he thought this was going to remain a secret, he's just mad that he didn't get to control the narrative.
Well, regardless of all that, I think he handled himself well. I think he got up and he said what needed to be said. He said people were going to be going...
Valium will do that. A fistful of Valium before a meeting will have that effect.
Well...
That's a joke. I don't know. He probably needed one yesterday, though, after the day it sounded like he had.
Well, all I can say... Well, and also I want to make this point about Fire Chief Deem.
Yes.
Because I have had communication with Fire Chief Deem, and... he is still the fire chief, because there is some...
Please don't let them run you out before your time.
Well, here's the thing. I'm not sure that that's what's going on. I'm going to have a conversation with Chief Deem. I couldn't have that conversation last night with everything going on. I have communicated with him. And just to be clear, he did not resign. He is still the fire chief.
Okay.
Kyle did say
he was going to retire.
Kyle said he has communicated that to him, but he has not put anything in writing yet.
Okay. Well, what I heard was there was a kerfluffle. Did you like how I got harlequinade?
I did smile at that. Yes, I did. Yes.
Oh, that's good. That popped into my head, and I'm like, by God, I'm going to use it.
Good word.
It was, and it was very apropos at the time. I always screw that one up. I was told, and I don't know clearly because I wasn't there, but I was told by more than one person that Dean cleared his desk out yesterday. But if Chief Dean says he's still the fire chief, I'm glad to hear that because I like Chief Dean, and I hope he sticks around for a while, and I at least hope if he's leaving, it's on his terms and he's not being ran out or being because he's fed up or anything like that.
Yes, I don't think that's the case at this point. He is still the fire chief. We have talked to him about that. And this, I don't know what the retirement is all about. I don't know when
you're
that will take effect.
Retire, you're too young to retire. What are you going to do? Go play golf or something? Come on now.
Well, a lot of these firefighters and police officers retire early, and then they...
Oh,
you
know, I know, because they've been doing it for 30 years already, 40 years by the time they're 50.
It's a tough job. It's a tough job.
It is.
But we'll see. But those are all the things to clear up at this point, and I guess we'll go from here.
And so it goes.
And so it goes. Thanks. Bye-bye. All right. Phone lines are open. We've got about 9 minutes left in the broadcast here. 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. Feel free to give us a buzz. It's been a harlequinade this morning, I'll tell you. Mary Ellen Withrow, Jason Schauber, and Auditor of State Keith Faber. All right. Let's take the next phone call coming in here this morning. All right. Go ahead, caller.
Hey, Scott, how are you?
Doing well. How are you?
Doing well. I was just calling in to add a comment about the meeting last night.
Go right ahead.
And I'm just tuning in, so I apologize if anybody's already covered it. But I wanted to, I think Mr. Stevenson gave a really great commentary.
What did you like about Mr. Stevenson's commentary on flock cameras?
I think he just provided a lot of detail. He obviously had a very well thought out argument. But I had an interesting takeaway that I wanted to bring up and hopefully, you know, maybe help massage the conversation moving forward. I noticed that after Mr. Stevenson's commentary, Mr. Smith made a comment, something along the lines of, I don't know if maybe you recall, but Mr. Smith said something along the lines of, well, if the flock cameras are a problem, then all the ring cameras are a problem. Do you remember that comment?
I think there was something to that effect, yes.
Yeah, so my concern with that is, you know, obviously we had a lot of comments last night, and then towards the end, Mr. Smith says, if the flock cameras are a problem, then the ring cameras are a problem. My fear with that is I'm afraid that demonstrates like a fundamental misunderstanding of the flock system from Mr. Smith's perspective. And I think that is a big sticking point in this conversation in general. I think, you know, so many people just aren't aware of the totality of the system.
Do you think that these cameras have any chance of being removed? It seemed like everybody on that committee may be for some restrictions, but I don't think any of them was for them being removed.
I agree. I got the same impression. And you know, I think that's reasonable. But the problem is, and this was another comment from Mr. Smith that concerns me. I believe it was from Mr. Smith. But he said, you know, essentially he was saying that the police will do everything in their power to, you know, protect our data. And again, I think that's missing the point. The point is, and I believe somebody who got up and gave a public comment touched on this, but the point is that the police have no say in the safety of our data. With this system, the data lives with flock safety. It's on their servers. It's in their cloud. So to say that the police will do what they can to protect our data, that's all well and good, but the reality is the police have no influence on the safety of our data.
Well, what do you think is going to be the end result here?
I honestly think the can's going to get kicked down the road. I think that there's a lot of good points on both sides that have been brought up so far. I do think it's really interesting, people mentioning, you know, there were supposed to be votes and reviews prior that never happened. So I think there's a lot of threads to pull on here. And I'm not sure. I've been watching very interested, and I'll be very interested to see where it goes.
You have any thoughts on the financial situation in Marion going into fiscal emergency today?
I'll be honest. I feel like that stuff is over my head. I feel like I barely had the flock thing in particular piques my interest. I'm a technology guy. I'm an engineering guy. So, you know, that kind of makes my ears perk up. But the, you know, financial goings-ons, unfortunately, shamefully, I feel like I don't have a good ear to the ground on that very much.
Well, I'll tell you, no problem with that, because I'm sure the conversation on Flock cameras will continue, so I hope you continue to tune in.
I will. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye-bye. All right, phone lines are open here. We've got about 4 minutes left in the program now, 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. Well, it was a standing room only crowd last night, and I imagine a lot of that was in regard to the Flock cameras. Now, the other stuff, who knows at this point? It is what it is. I hate that saying, too. Go ahead, caller.
Hey, good morning, Scott.
Good morning.
Hey, just real quick, I wanted to offer my perspective on the comment by Mr. Rollins of best-case scenario. I think, and I'm not going to speak for Mr. Rollins, but I'm a realist, and I get the impression that Mr. Rollins is a realist. And I think Mr. Rollins, like myself, came to the conclusion that there's a lot of crap going on. There's a big issue, and I came to that conclusion back in January or before. And I'm pretty sure that on your show, I even said at some point, January, February, March, somewhere there, that, you know, the best thing that could happen right now is the state would come in and take this over, or those words, so to speak, because there's not a lot of trust in the system here in Marion. There's not trust in the people. There's not trust in the people doing their jobs or their ability to do the job. So from my perspective, the best thing that could happen, once you accept that there's a problem, and is, you know what, let's bring somebody from outside who's outside the box, who doesn't have a dog in the race, so to speak, in Marion. There's no, you know, familiar connections. There's no police connections. There's no, you know, silent sabotage or any of that. So on that aspect, I think, you know, exactly what Mr. Rollins said was that this is the best case scenario for the people who have long accepted there's a major problem.
Hey, we've got 2 minutes left here. What did you make of what Auditor of State Keith Faber had to say?
I was bitch, I'll be honest with you.
Well, you missed Keith Faber.
To all of it, so I wasn't, but, I mean, because I even had, when I started listening, I had to, like, you know, who in the heck is this guy? The fact that, you know, he said it is a major issue. It isn't something to take lightly. It isn't something to just poo-poo. He didn't say those words. I think people have this desire to be cookie-cutter, and it's all this person's problem or that person's problem. And you know what you find out in these big issues is it's a cascade of problems. It's a, you know, it's many people not doing their job to the level that they need to do it, and then the checks and balances aren't taking place, and people are spending money. I mean, you know, like my big issue with this with the city is, would the mayor tell his kids, you know, if they weren't reconciling their books and their bank account, hey, this is a good idea to go buy a house and paint it and, you know, buy new cars and paint all those and, well, hell, let's just paint the town while we're at it. You know, I mean, would that just be good financial advice that he would offer his kids?
Well, and I think that's what Auditor of State Keith Faber was talking about, is when he said the spending that went on when this administration started should not have happened because they should have been aware of what the financial situation was. And
because how's that a good answer to just say that, well, the books weren't being balanced? And I mean, so they show that they understood that they didn't know how much money was there. But I think they have the mindset that, you know, in city government and all that, wow, there's just always money coming in and we'll be all right.
Yep. Well, we're going to continue this conversation tomorrow. So I hope you tune in then. Hey, thanks for calling in.
All right, have a good day.
All right, we're done, but we'll be back tomorrow, 8:15 to 10 a.m. Tune in. I'm sure there'll be lots more to talk about. For this day, Scott Spears heading for the dugout.
Voice and Bozo's pretty much ended up sounding the same. I'll tell you one quick story. My wife and I were having